On today's show, let's look ahead to Cavs Magic on Wednesday and more. Thank you for making Locked On Cavs your first listen every day. Remember, we are free and available wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. That's BetOnline. That's where the game starts.
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
All right, the music you heard on the way in is from our friends at Astro Radio. Check them out on Apple Music or Spotify. I'm Chris Manning. I cover the Cavs and NBA large for places like Diamond Up Rocks and SB Nation. For the sort of that man is Evan Damrell. He is the proprietor, the boss man, the head honcho, the kingpin of Write Down Euclid. He's also at Fear the Sword as well. Today's show, segment one, we're going to look ahead big picture to Cavs Magic Wednesday night, 7 p.m. tip in Cleveland. Segment two, we're going to talk about the Evan Mobley versus Paolo Banchero matchup and some notes on Evan Mobley's offense. And then segment three, we're going to give some updates from practice on Tuesday, specifically on Darius Garland, on Ricky Rubio, and something Caris LeVert said about his role that I thought was interesting. But Evan, let's start with Cavs Magic. So Evan, what is interesting to me about this game is that this is an Orlando team that has not been very good so far. They're near the bottom of the league in net rating. They're kind of on offense. They're a little bit better on defense. They're about average in three-point rate. They're about average near the... They're kind of near the bottom of the league in three-point percentage. They're average in rate at the rim. They kind of have a even split offense. The most interesting part about this game to me is really the Paolo Banchero, Evan Mobley matchup, because I think Mobley logically is going to spend a lot of time guarding Banchero, and I want to save that because I think it's kind of... We'll unpack that more in segment two. But this, I think when you look at the schedule, you look at where Orlando's been so far, you look at, you know, the kind of the goals of the Cavs season, this is one of those ones you want to take care of business at home and beat a team you're on paper better than so far, especially because both teams are coming in not on the second night of a back-to-back. The Cavs aren't, you know, like, this is rest-wise a very good situation coming off of not playing since Sunday for Cleveland.
Yeah, it absolutely is. The Cavs are in an interesting spot as well, where they've won two games in a row, too. And they have a lot of positive momentum heading in this game. I wouldn't want to say this is a trap game because this is a Magic team that does play hard, but they are missing key players in Jalen Suggs, Markelle Fultz. I know he can't stay healthy, but he is a key player in the grand scheme of things. Paolo Banchero is intriguing. I think Wendell Carter Jr. is interesting as well. This could be a game where the Cavs kind of just say, like, hey, we can handle these, not quote-unquote lesser opponents, but teams that just aren't on the same level as us, and then begin to shift focus towards Boston on Friday.
Orlando's going to throw like some funky things at you. Like, they have a lot of wings that are really interesting. You know, Franz Wagner, Banchero is kind of a bigger 3-4 wing. Like, they have Bamba and Wendell Carter Jr., who is like an interesting younger center rotation. Carter Jr. in particular took that big step last year. You know, Jalen Suggs has been out with an injury for a little bit, so. You know, Markelle Fultz is out, so this isn't even like necessarily a full strength Magic team. They've run a zone as well in some of their games, which I think will be interesting to see how Cleveland deals with that. You know, I don't think we've really seen them navigate that. I think it's a little trickier for them to deal with in terms of not having Garland, because it just takes away some of your spacing. But I'd like to see them kind of how they handle that. I'm curious to kind of see what looks Orlando's going to throw at Mitchell. They have different guys they could throw that way. I think Suggs would have been fun to just see a younger guy to have to defend Mitchell like that, but he, you know, has been hurt. You know, maybe they throw a Franz on him or someone a little bit bigger, but that is some of the intrigue. On the Cavs side of it, though, they are fifth in field goal percentage at the rim, which feels right. The interesting part is they're also first in three-point percentage coming into this game at 44.6%. So we talked about this on the Monday show. We expect that to drop at some point. That is just, I think, unsustainably high. So whenever that happens, what does that look like? Is this a game, and how do they kind of adapt? I think it's just a thing I'm kind of continually being looking at until it happens.
I think Chetty Osmond is a good barometer of it. he's just shooting blisteringly hot from the perimeter right now, and I think he will eventually regress back to the mean a little bit. Hopefully the Cavs can kind of just find a balance of Jetty at the end of the day with Donovan Mitchell and eventually Darius Garland, then hopefully Ricky Rubio as well, just kind of feeding him easy looks on the perimeter. It is interesting to note, because I asked Jetty, like, what's the difference? He's like, DG just tries to get his own shot, or he's trying to set up others within the offense, where Donovan's kind of attacking the basket and then kicking it back out to one of us on the perimeter, and he's just benefiting from it. But on the Cavs side of things, I agree. Like, this is an interesting game. I would have liked to see Jalen Suggs defending Donovan Mitchell. I don't know. Cole Anthony is, like, a really fun player, too. Like, the Magic have a lot of fun young players. Franz Wagner's fun. But I'm more interested than anything to see, like, Evan Mobley defending Paolo Banchero, because you would assume at least that maybe Isaac Okoro draws the start tomorrow night with Darius Garland still out, tonight with Darius Garland still out, and Evan Mobley then could kind of play a bit of a free safety if you put Okoro on Banchero, or do you put Mobley on Banchero and just kind of make him uncomfortable, because he is a multifaceted wing. I think he has the ability to be a three-level scorer. He's not quite showing it quite yet because he's like shooting 17%, I believe, from three-point range to begin the season. And again, it's a small sample size. We can't crucify him quite yet, but it's an interesting matchup for sure. And also this ditto for Jared Allen versus Wendell Carter Jr. and Bol Bol and Mo Bamba. Like, all those, like, the Magic have some interesting big men that are very stretchy, and historically, Jared Allen has struggled at times defending guys on the perimeter. Like, they did an okay job defending Nikola Vucevic. At least he didn't get a ton of offensive rebounds like Vucevic did against the Celtics the other night. But at the same time, the Magic are just kind of interesting, where they can really space things out if they want to. And like you said, they play a little bit of zone, so maybe it just kind of doesn't play to Cleveland's strength of attacking at the rim. And I'm interested to see how this goes. But to your point on the three-pointer, I think Jetty Osman's the barometer, and they will fall back down to earth a little bit. But maybe this is stylistically how they approach things now.
Yeah, and look, defensively, they'll have to deal with some wing stuff. I think Mobley, who we're going to transition to talking about in detail in a second, is kind of your answer for some of that wing stuff. But this is the game where, like, he's going to defend Banchero, and obviously, like, Friday he might be spending time defending Jason Tatum, and this is like, Banchero is obviously not nearly as good as Jason Tatum at this point in time. Tatum's like an MVP candidate, and Banchero is just merely like a very interesting rookie. Okay, after the break though, we're gonna dive specifically into this Mobley versus Banchero matchup. I have some notes on what I think makes this sort of compelling, but first, gonna tell everyone about our friends at LinkedIn as I find this. These days, every new potential hire can feel like a high-stakes wager for your small business. You want to be 100% certain that you have access to the best qualified candidates available. That's why I have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the right people for your team faster and for free. All it takes is filling out the right information and clicking a few buttons, and you'll be searching for the next great team member. Then add your job in the purple hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile to spread the word that you're hiring. Simple tools like screening questions make it easy to focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience, so you can quickly prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. Finding the right team member is paramount to ending the year strong. We know that at Lockdown Cavs, we added Jake Stevens this year as we pushed into the second half of the year. That has made this team better. And you need the right tools to do it. LinkedIn can be that tool. It is that tool. It's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/LockedInNBA. That's linkedin.com/LockedInNBA to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. All right, we're back here on the Locked On Cast podcast. I'm Chris Manning. That's Evan Damerel. Evan, let's discuss why Banchero v. Mobley, particularly I think when Banchero was on offense and Mobley is on defense, is such a compelling matchup. It is, for me, the popcorn matchup of this game, the thing I will be most closely watching and probably going back to depending on how it turns out. So Banchero, as a rookie, has a top 10 usage rate for his position so far, according to the Clean of the Glass. Lots of shots at the rim, lots of shot in the long mid-range, not a ton of threes yet. He's getting fouled and going to the free throw line a ton. He's getting the top 6% of players in his position in terms of free throw rate. In the first four games for Orlando, he has taken 7, 8, 11, and 11 free throws. That is a lot. He's not getting a ton of and-one opportunities, which is sort of interesting, but he's getting to the line a lot. Mobley, meanwhile, barely fouls. One of his best attributes as a defender is that he is so long, he is so nimble, he is so smart that he does not foul guys, contest shots without really having to go too far. Banchero, on the other hand, has been very good in initiating contact, being very physical, being explosive, and forcing guys into really tough positions. This is going to be really fun to watch Mobley defend Banchero. And, you know, like, this is one of the few times we're really going to get to see Mobley kind of have to do something like this. And I think this is very clearly just going to kind of be two strengths kind of going head to head. And two very skilled, interesting young players. I want to see what this looks like.
I would say Evan Mobley defending Paolo Banchero is like a midterm. Well, defending Jason Tatum on Friday and then on November 2nd is more of the practical and final exam, just mixed into one. If you were like doing this as a course evaluation, where Banchero is an interesting matchup. I didn't know the free throw rate. That's actually pretty incredible for a rookie to kind of be hitting that kind of numbers. And I think eventually with the long twos, those will eventually become three pointers, as Cavs fans know with Colin Sexton. It's certainly a case that'll become a reality for the Magic. But for now, you don't really want to let Banchero get going. You don't want him to feel comfortable. You just kind of want to make him uncomfortable. And I think throwing Evan Mobley at him to start the game is going to make things certainly interesting, where you can kind of shut off his water a little bit, just make him feel a little flustered, because he's dealing with a pretty elite defender at three levels on the floor. And also, just like as you said, a guy who rarely fouls as well. And Mobley's just really good at that as a defender. And I want to see how it evolves, but I think popcorn matchup's a good way to put it. I am curious to see Cole Anthony versus Donovan Mitchell as well. I mean, the Magic have a lot of fun young dudes on their roster. Like, Franz Wagner is fun too. Like, he's going to be interesting against Caris LeVert. Like, the defensive tactical planning on GB Bickerstaff's part will also be interesting too, because you could do a lot of different things where if, like, you throw Banchero off his rhythm, you can eventually take Mobley off of him and maybe put a different put like Isaac Okoro on there, just kind of keep him just feeling a little uncomfortable and feeling that pressure. And then you can let Mobley play a little bit of free safety at times too, and really be a disruptor in the middle of the lane, or let him float out on the perimeter and just be a really solid help defender.
Yeah, I think just the part about the Mobley part of this, maybe it's just easier to break down. Maybe it's just like whatever it is. This is just the head to head thing that I think is gonna pop.
Oh,
like,
for some, sure.
Yeah. Like, Cole Anthony is fun. He's going to take a lot of shots. Mitchell is going to probably outscore him. Like, he's just going to do that.
I don't think that's a hot take. So. Say it with conviction. Say it with your whole chest.
That is, Donovan Mitchell is a significantly better player than Cole Anthony.
Wow.
Just scorching for me, I know. But I am really curious to ultimately just see, like, how... I'm really ultimately curious to see just how Mobley, if Mobley like takes Banchero out of this game, or like the minutes they overlap, and you know, if there's a clear difference when Banchero is defended by somebody else like Dean Wade or something, and Mobley, you know, comes in and shuts the water off in that way, like it would tell you, I think, something about Mobley if he can negate some of what we've seen from Banchero's strength. So, Evan, let's move on to Mobley's offense before we kind of wrap up the segment, though. JB Bickerstaff was asked about this at media on Tuesday. Listening back to it, you know, he says, like, they need to get him more involved in some of these things. It's interesting that, like, I looked at his stats for the year. 32.3 minutes. He's averaging 13.3 points per game. He's shooting 59.1% of two-point attempts. That's 5% over last year, but he's taking three fewer twos a game. He's shooting 33.3% on 1 3-pointer per game. He's averaging 2.7 turnovers this year versus 1.9 last year. And he's averaging 5.3 rebounds versus 8.3 last year. The offensive stuff in particular, that he's shooting better on two-pointers, doesn't feel to me like totally reflective in how I felt about how he's played on offense. But what have you just made of the first couple games of Evan Mobley's offense? We hit on this a little bit on recap shows and things, but where are you at on Mobley's offense right now?
He is still a work in progress. I think that ankle sprain of his really did throw a wrench in his offseason development plan. And you're hoping to see maybe more three-pointers than one three-pointer a game. I think you're seeing a bit of the passing chops just when he's initiating the offense with Jared Allen in the low post or just things like that. And I think the problem, not the problem with Evan Mobley, but just like the thing with him as a player is he's wired to do the right, make the right play 100 times out of 100 times. And JB said this when asked about this question, where like if Evan sees a pass instead of a shot, he'll pass the ball because he'd rather get his teammates involved and make sure they make the correct play on that side of the ball, where you're still waiting for Evan Mobley to kind of have a little bit of that selfish streak sometimes where he's just going to take the ball and say, F it, I'm going to score. But that's okay. I think, as you pointed out, when the Cavs first traded for Donovan Mitchell, it softens the need for the Cavs to like have an immediate offensive leap from Evan Mobley, but it's still a work in progress. And I think he's still figuring out his fit in this new offensive system, figuring out his fit with Donovan Mitchell. And I know Donovan Mitchell said, like, yeah, they're more comfortable with one another, but they still need more time on the floor together to really figure out the fit. I think not having Darius Garland hurts a lot too, because Garland has that familiarity with Mobley, and when he's handling the ball, he's probably going to get Mobley the ball more often than not. So I'm not too overly concerned. I do think the lack of shot attempts is just a product of the system, especially because Donovan Mitchell's taking almost 30 shots a game right now with Darius Garland out, and it's just the reality of the situation at this point. So you have to just keep tinkering and working with it, and Bickerstaff owned up and said it's on him and his staff to get Mobley more easier looks, and maybe against Bancaro, that's the opportunity, because coming out of Duke, Bancaro really wasn't known as like a hustle defender. He didn't exert a lot of energy on that side of the ball because he was doing so much on offense, and maybe this is the opportunity to kind of spark something for Mobley so he can build some forward momentum to Boston on Friday, because Boston's quite a different monster compared to Orlando and just on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, Mitchell definitely, like, he's just going to absorb offensive stuff from people on this team. I mean, he's taking 23 shots a game so far this season. It's up from 20.5 last year when he had one of the highest usage rates in the entire NBA. And, like, obviously Mitchell's out. The system's different. It's just he's taking like lots and lots of shots, and someone like Mobley's, who's not, you know, getting the ball, taking threes in that way, is certainly going to lose some shot attempts away. The other part of it, I thought that it was interesting that Bickerstaff mentioned it, was that he mentioned that like Mobley is a little more effective in terms of face-ups, and when he can get his space and generate that way, and I think the face-up jumper is a tool for him too. So I'm curious to see how some of that might evolve in sort of how they approach that and how he kind of improves or doesn't improve, or sort of what this looks like once we get to 10, 15 games and some of this kind of makes a little bit more sense in context. But like, I would I be like worried about Mobley? No. Do I think it's clear that this is the side of the ball where this is, there's a lot more development to go? I would say yes.
Yeah. I don't think you're completely off on that at all. It's just, he's very raw offensively. I think there's a lot of untapped potential there. It's just now on the Cavs coaching staff to kind of mold him to maximize his potential there offensively. But there's a lot of good stuff there, and I think the passing translated a little bit sooner than everyone expected. Like, you see some good passing from him, just good playmaking in general. It's just finding his comfortability and familiarity so that he doesn't feel like he's doing too much or doing the wrong thing, so it doesn't crater his confidence, is kind of key right now, because you are making up for lost time with him missing so much time in the preseason and during training camp.
Yes. All right, one more break. We're going to come back and we're going to dive into a couple of injury notes. Darius Garland, Ricky Rubio, something JB Bickerstaff said about him that we'll just throw that in there, and then also Caris LeVert talking about his role, which feels like a good pairing with the Tuesday episode, if you've not listened to that, where we dove into LeVert, Osman, you know, Coro in some detail. But Evan, you're first going to tell us, as I pull up the overlay, about our friends at BetOnline.
Well, first off, folks, if you haven't listened to Tuesday's episode, go listen and make sure you subscribe, because today's episode of Locked On Cavs has another wonderful sponsor like we do 5 days a week, and it's BetOnline. BetOnline.net is your number one source for betting football and the start of the new basketball season. Find all the latest player developments, team matchups, news, podcasts, and in-depth analysis on every game. And as always, BetOnline remains your continued source for all the sports wagering information with live betting and up-to-the-minute scores for every sport out there. The fastest and easiest way to check in on all of your favorite games and events, including MLB, MMA, boxing, golf, and so much more. So, if you're interested, head to their website today or use your mobile device to learn about the trends in action. As we're recording, there's no line yet on Cavs Magic, but I am more than positive they'll have one ahead of the game if you're interested. Also, it's worth noting the Cavs are plus 1,200 to win the East, the sixth best odds in the conference. Go check out our sponsor today, BetOnline. It's where the game starts.
Back here on the Locked On Cavs podcast, last segment of the day. Evan, here, let's first go to what JB Bakers have had to say about Darius Garland, a very short update, but here's the latest.
Better. You know, he's doing stuff on the floor now, breaking a sweat. You know, just, again, time will tell how far the swelling goes down, how quickly.
Do you expect him to play tomorrow or
not? I don't expect him to be there tomorrow.
So not going to play Wednesday. Basically, Evan, no new information from what was said over the weekend. Still very much just waiting on the swelling as far as Darius Garland is concerned.
Yeah, and I think if Donovan Mitchell wasn't on this massive tear offensively right now, maybe the Cavs are trying to see if they can gear him up for the game against Boston. But if Mitchell just carries this momentum that he's had through Orlando and into Boston on Friday, like if you could let Darius Garland completely rest up, make him sure he's completely right, and also, you know, save his legs for the entire season, it's a good way to go about it. But it is promising to hear that there was a slight update on it. I don't know if you're going to play the clip or not, but he was able to get in some light work today, Bickerstaff shared with the media, and he didn't go to the full extent of what that encapsulated. Did that involve contact? Did that involve individual shooting? Did that just include stuff on the bikes or on the treadmills or something like that? Like, we don't know. But it is encouraging to see that he is taking the right steps in the right direction to recovering. But I think with Donovan Mitchell just on such a tear, the Cavs don't really have to rush Garland back, and that could benefit them in the long run. Health-wise, it's just the only unfortunate thing is you want him out there getting live ball reps with Mitchell and Mobley and everybody else.
Yes, okay. The other injury update is Ricky Rubio. This is just what he had to say.
It's going well. I mean, you guys, you know, see him here now. He's starting to do more and more with the team, which is awesome. Like, you know, the guys, you know, cheering for him, pulling for him, just to see him to be a part of it. So he's, you know, again, progressing and heading in the right direction.
So no real substantial update there, but that's just he's doing more stuff with the team. That was kind of something he hinted at media day. Evan, I come away from earlier in the season kind of thinking that Ricky Rubio makes a lot of sense for some for stuff this team kind of needs. I think they miss him in a lot of ways. He is, I think, you know, we've said this a lot, like they signed him the multi-year contract. I think in theory, this isn't just about this year with Rubio, but I think when he comes back, whenever that is, I'm very curious to see what he looks like and very curious to see just kind of when he actually is able to come back and how this progresses.
Yeah, having Ricky Rubio to round out the back end of your rotation probably just, you know, eliminates Robin Lopez. Probably some minutes from Dean Wade as well, and Hollow Neto just won't touch the floor for the Cavs when Rubio is back. But I have seen him almost after every practice during Cavs media availability, and he's getting some consistent sweat and work in with all the coaching staff, just working basically on his cutting, his lateral quickness, his shooting. You can see at first, like, he didn't have a ton of lift on his shot, but you slowly see him progressing where he's actually able to get off the ground and land comfortably a little bit. Not like a dramatic jump or anything, but you're seeing the progression in real time, which is kind of fascinating to see because we don't really have a clear deadline of when he's going to be back. And again, before they had Donovan Mitchell, maybe the Cavs are a little more pressed to have Ricky Rubio come back sooner instead of later and hope for the best of his health. But again, with Mitchell, you don't need to rush Rubio back at all. So realistically, probably just January, maybe late December, but probably February at the absolute latest he returns. And then you can really round out this rotation, work through the rust and the kinks he has just within Cleveland's system, and probably just start gearing up for a serious playoff run at that point. And just hearing an update is good on him. Injury-wise as well, like Dylan Windler, JB shared with me the other day prior to the game against the Wizards that he's progressing as well and doesn't seem like he's just been practicing at all and he's been out for every game this season. But the healthier the Cavs are, the more bodies they have on deck, the better.
Yes, Rubio being,
Rubio's paramount. Not paramount, but he is a key cog in terms of the role players for the Cavs.
He's a possible rotation piece, and Windler just probably isn't. I mean, I think certainly isn't. Okay, we'll end on this. This is just, I found this Caris LeVert clip on his role and how it's evolved and what they're asking of him to be sort of entering. So we're going to play that, and we'll talk about that, and we'll wrap it up.
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge, but it's fun. You know, it's something that I pride myself on, playing both ends of the floor. So it's new for me, for this team. But like I said, it's fun, and I'm looking forward to continue to grow into the role and keep evolving as well.
Has anything like stood out to you? I guess I know it's only 3 games in, but about that role, kind of what's different at all about it?
Yeah, you just got to be locked in every possession. Mm-hmm. Because like you said, it changes, you know, from who I'm in the game with, who I'm defending, things like that. You know, my role kind of shifts from playmaker to scorer to defender to, you know, different things. So just being locked in every possession.
How difficult is it for your role to bounce around between all those different things?
It's a little challenging, but like I said, it's fun just because I have to be locked in. It challenges me to be the best version of myself. So it's definitely something I'm looking forward to keep, you know, getting better at.
Have you ever been in a situation before in your career where you felt like you had to do, you know, a number of different roles on any given night?
I don't know, maybe my 3rd year. I was asked to do a lot of different things, but I think this year is probably the most I'm being asked to be just versatile across the board, for sure.
Evan, what stands out to me about that, I think more than anything else, is I think a reminder that, like, even though we view some, I think we can talk about this, and I think sports and generally fans can talk about this, these guys is sort of chess pieces on a board and things to move around. There is, like, something very just human about, like, he is in a contract year. He is, I mean, he says he's healthy for the first in a while, and he's, you know, deeper in his career, you know, than he was in his 3rd year, like you said. This is something they're asking that is kind of new for him. They're asking to expand himself, and that can be an adjustment. That is a challenge. That is asking, I think, a lot of Caris LeVert in an interesting way, and I think seeing how that process is and all that is just sort of interesting to me. That to me is why that clip stuck out. I think what he said, we've already kind of understood that's kind of what was going on. To hear him just sort of in some, even in a kind of like a, not a super deep way, but I think acknowledge that reality was just sort of caught my eye a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. It did catch my eye. I think him kind of being realistic and honest with the fact that he has been in the league for a while, he has struggled to stay healthy, but him being asked to do a lot of things at once kind of reminds you of how the Cavs utilized Larry Nance Jr. They asked him to be a playmaker, a shooter, a defender, a slasher, a rebounder, a lot of different things, an initiator on offense, or a guy who just throws the ball ahead on the fast break or things like that. And they're getting some of it cobbled together, the Cavs are, and I think it's still going to be a work in progress. I think you and I both have some quiet concerns about defensively, just in clutch time situations, the trifecta of Garland, Mitchell, and LeVert, and I think that's going to be something J.B. Bickerstaff kind of needs to figure out, and probably needs a lot more tape and data on, just because there's like 13 minutes total of Garland playing against Toronto so far this season, so it isn't much, so just keep kind of playing and see how it's going. But Caris LeVert's playing really well, I think. Again, as I noted on Tuesday's episode, and folks, listen to it if you haven't, I think Isaac Okoro just kind of having a crappy start of the year is also not really pushing him and kind of making him feel unsettled about what his role is, and he was asked, like, when did he know? He's like, I was never really told. I just kind of assumed I was the starter because I kept running in units with the ones and everything. So I think the Cavs just finding a semblance of balance and normalcy where they're not trying to rock the boat too much is going to be really beneficial for them when they have to kind of figure out so many intricate things with their star players still. Just makes sense. And I think LeVert is just, he's fitting for now. And that's all you can really ask for out of him.
Friday could be really fun in terms of what his character will look like in crunch time as far as games go.
Yeah, Friday's going to be interesting because Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, and Jason Tatum is going to pressure the Cavs in a lot of different ways on offense and defense.
Yeah, I mean, and I think like if he has to defend Brown or Tatum kind of coming downhill, I think particularly Tatum, obviously, I think that in itself is like, That is like kind of the Siakam thing in some ways. It's like, how do the Cavs adjust from what Toronto did and try to do something different? Even if it changes their scheme, like can the scheme be adaptable, I think is sort of just an interesting question that I'm very curious to see how that goes. Evan, any final thoughts before we end this one?
No, not really. I'm looking forward to this Magic game. I think they are a fun young team. I think I've said that too many times at this point, and I expect the Cavs to win this game, but wouldn't be, I don't know, we'll see what happens. But Chris, how do you think it's going to go?
I think they win. I think they're just better right now than the Magic have proven to been. I expect some dicey moments just because I think the personnel leads the way, but I think the Cavs should win. I suspect they'll be decent favorites for this one, and I think this should be a third win of the season. Orlando will remain winless, but what we've seen so far, I think, from both teams will lead you to think the Cavs should be expecting to win this one.
Yeah, we're on the same page, my man.
All right, we're going to end it there. We'll be back Thursday. I can't believe it's already Thursday this week. To recap that game, we'll do big takeaway, our awards, and some miscellaneous notes. Check out our post-game instant reaction as well. We'll have those up on our YouTube, on our TikTok page, on our Instagram, all of those great platforms. Thanks again for listening to us today. This episode was, as always, produced by Jake Stevens. For your next listen, check out Locked On Sports Today. It is the biggest sports story of the day, plus instant reactions, big game recaps, and the take of the day. Available on the Odyssey app, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcast. I'm Chris, that's Evan. Thanks again to Jake. Thanks again to Astro Radio, everyone. Be well. Talk to you after Cavs Magic.